This show is furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervie, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. And today I'm here, as usual, to be the managing partner of your life. But I'm not managing my life very well today. First time in 7 years, I have not made it into the studio. I took my family on a nice little trip to Joshua Tree this weekend, and we are still traveling, trying to get to the studio. The show is live, that's for sure. And I really need to thank my guest co-host today because she is the ultimate professional. She's going to have to run with the ball, and she's good with that because she's got a sports background. We are so privileged today to have Jillian Barbary with us.
Hi,
who
Alan.
Is a television personality, and I must say a real personality. Everyone who knows her knows she is a personality. She's laughing as I'm introducing her. She's a former actress. She's a sportscaster, a radio host. She does just about everything. She was on Fox NFL Sunday, and she was there.
Well, you know what's funny,
Alan? For many, many years.
I'm watching the NFL Sunday now on the TV in the seat that I used to sit in with John Phillips, and I went to my office, and I took down all of my pictures, my mirrors, all my home decor is going in my car tonight. Alan, you are stuck on the road. Welcome to L.A., right? I mean, Joshua Tree.
I know. I can't
what a drive.
That. Wait a second. I got to ask you something.
Yeah, of course.
Now, Jillian, you were on KBC.
Yeah.
Up until about a year ago.
Oh, my God. Can you believe
January
that?
January of 2020. You haven't taken down your things from your office?
Well, Alan, I live in the Valley. The station's in Culver City. I was like, I bought the mirror at TJ Maxx. Is it really $16 worth a drive back? And then my Hollywoodland picture I saw and I went, that's worth it. And then I looked at this big, fluffy, yummy girl chair with black arms on it. And of course, the guys have been sitting on it in their jeans and it's all dirty. So I said, they can have that. They can have that. But it's been fun to be back in the studio. Now, you've been doing this for many years, and it's funny. I was listening to your intro, and I thought, well, I can handle the life part. The law part, not so much. That's where your expertise comes in, because I've been on the other hand or other side of legal action, but I've never certainly been on your side. So this is going to be fun.
But you are someone who can handle anything.
Yes.
The story of your life is just so interesting.
Yes.
When we start back when you were adopted,
uh-huh.
and you actually found your adopted parents.
Yes.
And you have two sisters, is that right, who
yes.
actually grew up with your adoptive parents?
Exactly. Much to their dismay. Yeah, my mom and dad immigrated from Europe, and then they were young, like 17, a little too young. And so they had me, put me up for adoption, and then they had, they got married, tried to get me back and couldn't. I was in foster care, but they ended up having two daughters. So it worked out well. And I'm very close to everybody on that side of the family. It's fantastic. I mean, look, I found them. I hired a detective and they really had no choice. so with my dad's side, I never met him because my birth mom remarried. So she had three girls with this man, and then she got remarried, and that side of the family, they're the famous ones, they're from England, and she married, has a son with one of the Rolling Stones, and she's been married to Donovan for 50 years today.
Wow.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah.
Well,
today.
Happy anniversary to them.
Happy anniversary to Linda and Don.
What was it like finding them? Because a lot of people do not want to do that. They don't want to know, and you obviously did. Was it weird or was it comfortable?
Oh, that's such a great question. A great question in the sense that, I was never uncomfortable growing up knowing I was adopted. I was the black sheep. I didn't look like anybody. And so when I found my family, I'm like, my gosh, they're circus freaks like me. And I kind of fit right in. And I look a lot like my mother. And my sisters look like my father, who's Lithuanian. And so it really was wonderful. And then, you know, both of my birth parents passed, Alan. I don't know if I told you this, but my mom and dad, who raised me, you know, a half an hour away, they came to their funeral. So it was really nice.
Wow.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate. And I know one of our guests today has written a book on her family. And boy, what a story that is. We'll get to that.
A dysfunctional family.
Yes. So I feel really, I feel lucky, Alan. I feel lucky. Now you're there driving home with your family. And I can't imagine, how are your kids in the car with traffic? Cause mine aren't so good. And do they play games?
Well, my kids are a little younger than yours are.
Yeah.
And they're really tired right now. They did a lot of hiking in Joshua Tree yesterday. They were swimming this morning. They've been fantastic. I must say they've been quiet. They're sitting in the back, really quiet.
Lovely.
And they, you know, they're not as aware. I was listening to your podcast. You've got a great podcast called Ask Jillian.
Yes.
And you had Ruby and Rocco on. In the last couple of weeks.
I did.
And they are brilliant. I mean, they are so perceptive about life. How is it that you've been able to teach them all of these life lessons? You have such a great family spirit, yet when you look back in your background, you've had your ups and downs, especially coming out of the breast cancer recently.
Well, yes, and thanks for bringing that up. Well, when I had breast cancer, I came right home that day, and I actually was supposed to be here at KBC, and I thought, how am I going to tell them? That I wasn't afraid of breast cancer. I was just afraid of telling them. But I was able to say, hey, remember Deborah Tate? Deborah Tate, you might know from the Manson murders. They killed her sister. She had breast cancer, and I helped her through it. We started GoFundMe, and I took her to a breast cancer place in Beverly Hills. Little did I know a year later I'd be there for my own.
Wow.
She had a lumpectomy and radiology, but I had a double mastectomy and chemo. So I said, kids, listen, I'm going to get for lack of a better term, I'm not going to have anything, you know, but they've served me well. They used to feed you, and I've done lots of magazines, and it's time for them to go bye-bye because they have their poison. And then I said, look, my hair's going to fall out, and you know, I'll be bald for a while. And they were wonderful. But, you know, I wanted to do that podcast, Alan, to sort of, you know, how do you tell your kids you have cancer? How do you raise kids as a single mother? Do you date? No, I don't. Never brought a man home. How do you tell your kids? How do they deal with social distancing? How do they deal when their father gets remarried to a much younger woman and they have a baby? I mean, she's, what, 33 years younger than me, or 23?
Wow.
So it's all that. There's no book for it. So I really wanted to explore their feelings. And it's worked out really well. And I said, you can call her. They call her, what the hell's the word? I like her. She's a lovely woman. I can't think of what they call her. Not Mamacita. But they call her.
I hope it's a complimentary name, if you don't want to get in trouble now.
No. Alan, it's...
You know, Jillian, I have to ask you, how do you juggle it? Because doesn't your ex-husband live up north? And
yes.
You have the kids here.
Yes,
so
I have had them, yeah. Well, I've had them for, let's see. So Rocco was in diapers when we got divorced. He's now 10. So that's 7 years. How do I do it? I have a woman that helps me.
I stumped you. That was the question. It stumped you. Nothing stumps you.
Well, I was thinking, what do I have? Alan, I have a wife, but I don't have to sleep with anybody. I just have to pay them, and then they can help me. And by that I mean, you know, I was the breadwinner in both my marriages, and let me tell you, it sucks because I look at women that are married to men, and the wives don't work, and I go, you know what? The older I get, I go, there's something in that. Because I used to say, oh, I feel bad for you guys. Like, I make my own money. I can buy my own shoes. I can buy my own purses. I don't have to answer to anybody. Well, I did, really, with the two husbands, even though I supported them. And the bottom...
Well, wait a second. Yeah. Red Barbary made some money as a baseball player before he retired.
I had to pay him alimony. I don't know how much he made, but I paid him alimony. Yeah.
Maybe he had a good lawyer.
Well, Alan, this is where you come in. Should I have hired Alan? Gervy? I mean, what was I thinking? Well, I think California law is, and you'll know this better than me. I was basically told by a judge, whoever supports the marriage supports the divorce. So I paid all our bills, even though he was a Major League Baseball player, and my TV career was kind of taken off. It wasn't, you know, anything big. But we bought a house together, so I had to buy him out of the house, and then I had to pay him for half the time we were married, alimony. And essentially, you know this, it goes into like a machine, it's an algorithm of sorts, and you can pay anywhere from, let's say, $5,000 to $15,000 a month. And that's what I did. And I did that for 3.5 years, and I didn't care. I didn't mind.
Wow.
But, you know, Alan, you know, go ahead.
I was going to say that I'm just thrilled that you came around to the legal issues, because it is a legal show.
Yes.
And it took us a little while, but, you know, as long as we start talking about divorce, there it is. Now we've justified and validated Gervie's Law.
Yes! Of course!
But we do, you know, Jillian, it is really nice talking to you on the phone. I'm going to see you shortly.
Yes.
But we have to take a break.
Okay.
If anyone wants to call in, it's 800-222-5222. You remember that number?
Yes, it's 1-800-222-KABC, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
Okay.
You probably dreamt about it. It was probably in your dreams.
I had nightmares. No, I mean dreams, yes.
Nightmares, yes. That's another issue we can talk about. But we're going to talk more to Jillian Barbary after the break. If you want to check her out on Twitter, it's Ask Jillian. The podcast is Ask Jillian. Mm-hmm. Lot of answers if you ask Jillian.
Oh, I don't hold back, Alan.
I know you don't. You're one person who says the things that everyone else is thinking. Now, we need to take a break. This is the Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Wow, some depressing music we're leading into here.
How perfect, though. The Godfather? Ooh, parts one and two. Yikes, so good. Part three, not so much.
It's teasing us for our next guest, who will be Lisa Novick Goldberg. We're going to talk to her in a few minutes.
Oh, I'm so excited.
A book called The Apple and the Shady Tree. But, you know, we've got Jillian Barbary on the ropes here, and we want to really find out a little bit more about what's been going on with Jillian over the last little bit. Now, Jillian, I know that you have done a lot of work with the prevention of cruelty to animals. You've adopted animals.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your passion for helping animals.
Well, that's no way to talk about my two ex-husbands. But, yes, I actually have adopted. You know, I used to do a segment on Good Day LA called Adopt a Pet. And then they said, well, we're going to change the segment to watch Jillian adopt a pet. But I over the 20 years I was at Fox, I did probably, I think I adopted 24, including rabbits.
Wow.
And yes. And much to my ex's dismay, I would come home with a dog and he would like look at me pulling up in the driveway and give me that look that still gives me PTSD. So I do love working with animals, but I'll tell you what threw a monkey wrench into my life, the cancer. And it just slows you down. You're getting chemo and you're thinking, I don't have, you know, then I got to go home and look after the kids. And I did this radio show the whole time I had cancer. And it just, you know, Alan, it really reprioritizes your life. And not in a horrible way. It really made me just go, okay. And I'm cleaning out my life right now, which is wonderful. Like, all my TV clothes, gone. I'm selling everything. Shoes, bag. I don't need all that crap. I need my health and my family. Boom, that's it. That's all that matters.
So how does that happen when you go through this process? And thankfully, you're doing well right now with the cancer, right?
Yeah, remission. Mm-hmm.
Remission. So that's good news. But so tell us how your thought processes work when you start realizing that maybe there's more important things than shoes and clothes and Nutrisystem and cosmetics and dating and good looking. And both your husbands were really good looking.
Yeah,
so,
they
were. If you had to do it over again, would you find some ugly guys?
Well, you're funny. I'll tell you what is not as important. Now, certainly there was chemistry when I was living in Miami. He played for the Marlins and I was on TV and he was, you know, we were 22, great looking guy and we dated and boy, we had some things in common and we ended up getting married, but it was like, It's L.A. It's a starter marriage, right? We moved here. And then I married the former sniper who was, he wanted to be an actor. And he was great looking. But what comes with that is, you know, my years and my whole life on Fox, it wasn't about looks. It was about being funny and quick and knowing my stuff and being interested in the guests. I'm always interested in people,
yeah,
whether they're famous or not, I don't care. And so I feel like, it was a tough go for a while because he's a very good looking, but very controlling person. And I'm a free spirit. And let me tell you, that doesn't fly. That is a hard combination. Yeah. A person who's so, yeah, that was tough going for a while. And also, let me say, I will never get married again because I don't want to take care of men anymore. I'm done. I want to take care of my children, and that's that. That's it. And I don't date. I don't care. I have great friends, and I think that's. But then when I hear people
date? You have so much to offer. Don't you think someone would enjoy spending time with you alone?
Oh, my gosh. I've got boobs without nipples. I've got no job. I've got two kids. I am no walk in the park. I'm not an oil painting, Alan.
There are men in this world that are not that shallow.
Oh.
Maybe they don't care about your nipples.
Wait, this is L.A., right, Alan? I'm sorry. Let me write that down.
You know, the two of us, if no one was listening, we could talk about our roots in Canada and maybe things would be different.
Well, here's the thing, Alan. You are a Canadian, and I spoke with you about this and about, you know, where we've lived, and you're from the West and I'm from Toronto. Then you live in Toronto and you're very Canadian. And when I say that,
yes,
I mean that as the biggest compliment. My friends down here that are Canadian don't care. I mean, they don't care about the business. When I first called my parents and I said, I'm going to be on the Tonight Show, I remember my dad was like, okay. And then I was like, oh, you want to know who the other guest is? No. Like, they're not impressed.
Right.
And it keeps you grounded. And I think Canadian men, like I always, my girlfriends always say, come back here. There's so many guys that you could go out with. But I've got it in my own head, you know, where I've had very, very, very bad experiences with marriage, and I can't be the breadwinner and be everything, have the babies, lose the weight, bring home the bacon. I'm done. Like, no, 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 no. Well, they sit on their asses. No, I'm not doing it anymore. I can't. So when you ask me if I'd marry an ugly man, yes, if he was very wealthy, absolutely. No, he'd have to get along with my kids.
The other thing, what you're not saying, but you have told me before, is that you are dedicated to your children.
Yeah.
And that does make it difficult to do. Like you said, you don't want to bring someone home, you know, when your kids are still young enough and impressionable enough. And maybe they would appreciate seeing you with another guy, but you're so dedicated
to
them and their well-being.
You're funny. You're very insightful. Yes, my daughter said she's right, because my ex is remarried and they got a baby. And she said, Mom, don't you think you want to go on a date? I'm like, no. And then they'll say very subtly, well, Mommy, you know, we wouldn't mind if you went on a date. Like, don't make it our, like, we don't care. And I'm like, no, it's not about you. I just, it's very hard in L.A., to meet people and to tell you what a bad picker I have. I mean, when I was up in Canada, speaking of our next guest, I was very friendly with the head of the mob in Canada. He run Hamilton and Montreal and had connections to the Bonanno family, Johnny Pops Papalia, and I loved him. And the guy that had him whacked pursued me, sent me flowers, we call him Fat Pat Masitano. And so I knew these guys. Yes, I have a very bad picker, you see. And so I just rather stay single than get whacked. No, I mean, just then, you know, have to break up eventually in a bad way. Cement shoes at the bottom of the Lake Ontario.
There's a certain maturity to that. And I think that a lot of people would appreciate it. But, you know, at the same time, you do have to take care of yourself as well. You can't just simply think that, you know, you're doing everything for everyone else. And, you know, and it's interesting because on your website, you talk about people knowing you. They know you as a broadcaster, as an actress, as, you know, a pitch person.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they don't know who you really are.
Right. I'm very quiet. I'm so boring. People say, oh, you're the life of the party. Am I? I go to bed at 8 and I read at least 4 books a week, and I'm just bubba boring. I'm curious to you as to what you, as a lawyer, do you okay, so if we're on the radio and then we finish at 6, it's done at 6. You go Monday and you do cases. Do you have to bring your work home? And then how do you separate? Like when I'm home, the kids, you know, but when you've got cases to really work on, how do you do the time thing? How do you do it?
It's funny because I'm still thinking about you saying, enough about me. Let's talk about you. I was just getting it. You didn't even talk about your love for documentaries.
That's true.
Because that's something that is so interesting. You have that side to you. But I will answer the question, and I'm not going to be like a politician.
Uh-huh.
And I know you're frustrated with politics these days, so I'm not going to be that politician and not answer your question. But the fact of the matter is, I have time for everything. I make time. I organize.
Oh.
You know, I'm with my kids. When I get home from work, I spend the time with my kids. When they go to sleep, you know, I spend time either with my wife or with my work. I try and balance things.
Mm.
I'm always thinking about my cases in the middle of the night. I'm coming up with arguments and things to consider with my cases. So it's just a matter of multitasking in the brain. I'm not a great multitasker with my hands, but with my brain, I really am, and I can organize and make sure that everyone gets the attention they need.
Jeez, so you, I wonder, because I'm not good at that. I don't know if that's a woman-man thing, but are you a type A personality? I'm just curious.
I'm a type A personality when it comes to work.
Okay.
At home, I'm a little bit like you. I'm a little quieter.
Yeah.
And I make sure that, you know, I try and give other people the opportunity. When we go out, I'm certainly not the life of the party.
Okay.
At least not now, I'm not.
Yeah.
So it becomes, I think, a matter of being on when you are working. And when I'm in front of a judge or at a deposition, I'm always on. But then I know how to turn it off.
It's funny you say about me being an actress. I watch lawyers, and boy, I was very enthralled, and I love documentaries and court cases. How lawyers are sort of actors. Well, not sort of, they are. And they're telling a story in a compelling fashion to sway 12 people to believe their story. So truthfully, you are an actor in sorts, but you have to have the legality behind you to back up your story that you're telling. I think it's fascinating.
It is fascinating, Jillian, but there's something more important than that.
Yeah.
My wife has to go to the bathroom. Much more important. We just arrived at the studio. We need to take a break. Have you ever, you've been doing it in this business for so long, and I don't know that you've ever heard that reason to take a break.
Sure. Absolutely. Listen, that's the most important reason to take a break.
It is a very important reason.
Yeah.
So we're going to be back. When we come back, we're going to talk to our guest, Lisa Novick Goldberg. It's such a delight having Barbary with us today.
Thank
You're
you.
Listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
On Wayman, I got
Sopranos.
Here.
Is it Sopranos? Yeah. Wow. Did you watch that show?
You know, I wasn't a big fan, but I know you were.
I did. I watched it. I'm a fan of true crime, though. And right now on, I think, Netflix, they have the five families. So they talk about the five big families in New York. I'll watch that forever. And I know a girl who dated Vinny the Chin's daughter.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. She's lesbian. And this, my friend is lesbian, dated her. And I said, wow, this is, I go, we need to have drinks.
You know, my only story was I used to work at NBC. I was a lawyer at NBC, and I was sitting in a jacuzzi in a condo that I was living in at the time when I was a young lawyer. And this guy was sitting beside me, and he whispered to me, I heard you work at NBC. And I said, yeah, I do. And he said, well, I want to tell you something. I said, okay, go ahead. He said, my name isn't Sal Senna or something, whatever his name was.
Yeah.
He said, I'm in the witness protection program. My name is Sal Palizzi.
Oh, my God.
And I was, part of, I can't remember who was the Columbo family or whatever it was.
Right.
And then he said, I really want to get a gig on NBC. So
well, that's quite of a witness protection, yeah?
So then he said to me, if you'll come with me to the bar, we're going to go and talk to my friend, Henry Hill.
I knew Henry. Henry used to get drunk and call up Howard Stern and be like, and he'd fight with the families of the people he had whacked. And then he would say stuff like, I'm basically in Santa Monica at the such and such hotel. And Howard would be like, shut up. You're telling him where you are. But Henry would get drunk. So you met Henry.
Yeah. So it was in Burbank. It was at a bar.
Oh, my God.
And his wife, and she was young. You know, all of this stuff. It was a long time ago.
Oh.
But it was really weird because all I was trying to do was being a lawyer. And all of a sudden, I'm brought into this underworld. And I became friendly with Sal. In fact, he's been on the show. He wrote a book called Sins of the Father. And, he's really come around. And it was interesting. I don't think that I was that excited at the time when he brought me into his world.
Right. Well, you were young and probably didn't understand the whole spectrum or scope of how big that is.
Exactly. I didn't.
It's massive.
And I don't know about you, but growing up in Canada, I just wasn't into the mafia as much as I could be. You were?
Well, I knew Johnny Pops Papalia, who ran, he was with the Bonanno family in New York, and he ran Montreal. After I think it was Rizzuto, and he got whacked. I loved him. He used to rent video movies from me. I swear to God.
Oh,
and
really?
He'd come in with The Godfather. Go now. You already saw three. You hated three. You loved two. Why don't you get Scarface? No, but we had this great relationship. And one day he came in with a fedora, and he was a very classy man. He had a brother Rocco, not as classy. And then he got whacked, and the guy that whacked him, I was saying earlier, was a guy that was asking me out on dates constantly. Fat Pat Musitano, who just got whacked 3 months ago. Kid you not.
Really? 3 months ago?
3 months ago he got whacked.
How did you hear about that?
Well, my dad sends me all the mob stuff because he knows. He's like, hey, remember Fat Pat who used to send you roses? Yeah. He finally got whacked. I said, good, because he killed Johnny Pops. But I'll tell you one thing. He has a brother, Angelo, and they all have bulletproof windows down in Hamilton because Hamilton, Ontario is the big mob central.
I had no idea.
It is.
No idea.
And so they're all bulletproof, and they blew his car up and shot bullets in his window, but they didn't kill him. 5 months later, they shoot 5 rounds in him outside his lawyer's office. Still didn't kill him because he got a lot of fat, you see, a lot of blubber to go through. But they finally got him. My dad said, Fat Pat is dead. I said, thank God. He killed Johnny Pops. I got no respect.
Wow.
But I'm about to read. Now, when I found out that you called and I was doing this show and you were telling about the guest, I went on and looked up our next guest and I saw the books.
Yeah.
And I said, I have to order this. So I got it on Amazon and I realized I ordered the hard copy. I said, no. I can't. I want to read it tonight. So I got a Kindle with Amazon so I could read it right now.
That's amazing.
And it's absolutely fascinating.
It is.
It'll take me another, 2 hours to finish it.
Well, let me introduce Lisa now because
yeah.
I think that you and her will have a lot in common after hearing these stories. I kind of stayed on the periphery, but you got right in the middle of it.
Oh, I love it.
Her name is Lisa Novick Goldberg. She's written an incredible book. It's called The Apple in the Shady Tree. She talks about her life growing up, and it's really quite unbelievable. When you talk about dysfunctional families, this is really a memoir of a dysfunctional family. Really interesting, though, in her relationship with her father, who was the money man for the crime family, and so many interesting twists and turns in
yes.
the book. And you talk about Lisa and how it had affected her with anxiety, depression.
Yeah, and yet she still has moments in this book which are actually funny, which blew me away, which I loved. It's a very interesting tale of that because her dad.
People with anxiety and depression can be very funny. So,
I have both. Yeah. I'm medicated,
and you're hilarious.
Thank you. I am medicated for it, so thank God for medication. Keep it coming, or I'll be a dud.
We got to talk to Lisa. You know, the inscription on the book is to my father, whose life lessons, both good and bad, taught with intention or otherwise made me strong.
Wow.
And here she is, stronger than ever. Lisa Novick Goldberg, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Thank you so much. Hi, Jillian. Hi, Alan. Thanks for having me.
Lisa, how are you?
Oh.
No, I don't know about that. Extinguished, maybe. But how were you able?
Well, Jillian, I'm glad that you weren't extinguished. I'm glad that you didn't go out with the head of the mob in Canada. Because, you don't want to get whacked.
I like Johnny Pops. He was probably in his 70s when I was in my 20s. But Fat Pat was my age. And you coming from this family. I was reading about your dad growing up, Herbie Novick. He's also known as Big John Novick. And I'm curious how a man who comes from Brooklyn, who basically, you know, climbs the ranks and becomes part of one of the biggest five families. I'm curious about that, but I'm also, because Alan loves people's stories, and I do too. When did you know? I know that you had to testify at 30, but when you were growing up and seeing these people coming, going to your house and how they lived, how did you get an inkling, or did anyone say at school, like, we're terrified of your family or anything?
Absolutely, absolutely. Look, you remember the show with Fred Gwynn? The Munsters.
Yes. Of course.
Remember that wonderful show where he played?
Herman.
And Marilyn was the very lovely niece that everybody made fun of because she wasn't. Well, that's what our family was like.
Oh my
I
God.
Grew up, I was born in Brooklyn. I grew up in the Five Towns of Long Island, which is a neighborhood that's 99.9% Jewish. And all my friends' parents were doctors and lawyers and, you know, accountants. We did not look like these people. We did not act like these people. It was clear that there was something very different about the Novicks. And I knew when we would go into restaurants, we were treated specially. When all the other kids were going on school vacations to Williamsburg, Virginia, and Expo 67, I was going to the Frontier Hotel on a junket in Las Vegas.
Wow.
Curacao Hotel in Curacao, the island, on a junket. So I clearly knew that we were not like everybody else. But it wasn't until I was 30 and I was subpoenaed to appear before a grand jury that was investigating the five families, mob control in the New York City area, that I had a rude awakening as to the extent of my father's involvement with the Genovese family. I had never even heard my father's name connected with the Genovese family. It just wasn't, we didn't, you know, he didn't come home. First of all, he was rarely home. And secondly, when he was home, we didn't get together at the table and, you know, pass the mashed potatoes and let's talk about who got whacked today.
Wow. So, I'm sure he was privy to a lot of that.
It was never hidden. Nobody ever said to me, you know, we hung up, my father's friends were all Italian, and we hung around with all these people that lived in the city and who were different from my friends' families. No one ever said to me, this is a secret. It just wasn't. It was all out in the open.
Lisa,
my dad talked like this. And he looked like this in his members only jacket that he wore, you know, year round with his big sunglasses. And that was that. So I knew we were different. Tremendous inkling.
Lisa, you were working at the bank, though, and it seemed kind of sketchy, the whole bank experience. Mm-hmm. Talk about that. And you had like Orthodox Jews there and the Italians. And what was going on there?
Alan, I'm getting verklempt talking about this. It's eating at me. And by the way, Alan, I want to ask you, who are you calling dysfunctional? I heard you call me earlier, said something about dysfunctional family.
You know, I got to tell you.
Referring to my family.
I want to say something because you can't lay claim to dysfunction. If you talk to anyone and you get to know people in my business, I've had so many clients over the years. Do you know how many dysfunctional families there are? I think more so there are dysfunctional families than whatever would be considered a functional family.
I agree.
You know, I am going to answer your question, the original question, if I can remember.
I forgot what I do want
to tell you is, the book, it's oddly enough, and it's much to my surprise, I thought I was writing a book about the mafia. But it's turned out that the mental health aspect of the book is equally, is getting equally amount of publicity as the mafia side. People have looked at it and said, because of my openness about the dysfunction of my family and my willingness to talk about it, that people open up to me. And it's really, I've been asked to write articles and appear on shows about it because we all have dysfunction. That's one thing. Everyone if you scratch the surface, has something going on. Mm. There are Noviks in everybody's family.
Absolutely.
And people want to talk about it, but they have to feel comfortable. And I think that with what's happening in the news and everything now, there's much more of a dialogue and a willingness for people to be honest about the problems of their families and to seek help.
Lisa, so, it's funny you said about the honesty, and there used to be a between Italians and Jewish people, there's a connection. I dated a Sicilian, and people, he said, people think we're Jewish, we think we're Italian. It blends.
Right.
And interestingly enough, he would always say to me, he was Sicilian, that his father, who owned half of Toronto, of course he's not in the mob. Ooh. Well, then I moved to Miami and I read a book, and of course his name is mentioned all over the book. And yeah, of course, we were together 7 years. His dad, of course he was. And there was that certain amount of respect. I'm curious for you if you, this book in itself, in and of itself, because you had your own PTSD. You couldn't watch The Sopranos. You, right? And so was it therapeutic to write this in its entirety? And did you worry about pissing anybody off in the family?
I certainly did. In fact, I started to write the book in 2015 when my husband was diagnosed with cancer, and I knew that our regular crazy social life was going to come to a screeching halt. And over the years, everybody had been hearing all these crazy stories that I had been telling, some of them very funny, some of them very sad, and that I would have time to write. I knew that there was going to be a problem writing the book. I was terrified all these years since the grand jury. I was absolutely terrified of being somehow found out about some dark secret that I never knew of. I entered therapy, psychoanalysis, in 2014, and my therapist encouraged me to write the book because, one, it was a fascinating story to tell, and also because it would be cathartic.
Right.
What happened, ironically, is that it wasn't cathartic at the very beginning. It was terrifying for me. First of all, I was doing research, and I started with the FBI files and the Freedom of Information Act. I had requested information on my dad, and it came back that there were something like 27,000 entries on my father.
So that gave you an indication he's involved.
If that doesn't put you into, you know, gastric distress, nothing else will.
Yeah.
So at the beginning, it was not cathartic. I was having bad dreams, reoccurring dreams of the grand jury. And it was horrible.
Did you and a lot of people ask you this, and we have to take a quick break, but did you have any some concerns?
That was cathartic.
Yeah, I can imagine it was cathartic, but did you have concerns about exposing things and then having perhaps some backlash against you, either through the mob or through other people that maybe didn't want you to write about the things that you were writing about?
I was very conscious of that, and I discussed in writing, I was very conscious. Look, I didn't want to throw anybody under the bus. Nobody hurt me. They were all nice people. These were good people to me. These people were family to me. And I knew the kids now, that most of the people are dead or dying in jail. Mm. But I know their kids. And these are all solid, good people who were raised differently than their parents. I was not afraid of being of any kind of mob retaliation because there are no secrets in the book. Mm.
Yeah, you know.
But I got everything online. Everything was done. The research, it took me many years to do the research on these characters. So I wasn't afraid of that. But I was terribly afraid of throwing somebody under the bus.
I didn't
want to do that. And the book is written with that in mind.
Well, Lisa, we have to take a quick break. But also, you know, a lot of times we fear ourselves and our reactions and ourselves more than we fear what other people think.
Absolutely true. That's anxiety and depression. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting. The book is called The Apple and the Shady Tree. We're going to talk to Lisa Novick-Goldberg a little bit more after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Oh. Wayman, you're not going to run out of any of the Bob music.
No.
We could do this for hours and hours.
Oh, I love the soundtrack.
And Lisa probably would talk for hours and hours on this.
Absolutely. She's schooled on it.
She knows this stuff. It's Lisa Nova Goldberg. The book is called The Apple and the Shady Tree. You can get it anywhere. It's a fascinating read, not only because of the mob and the mafia stuff, but also just the reflection to have a daughter whose father was just such a complex character.
And part of the mob, but sort of like a money guy. Yeah. It's like a Meyer Lansky. The Jewish guy. They all need a great Jewish money guy. It's a, cliche.
You know, it's funny because we're laughing.
Alan's going to be next, by the way. He's looking into mob families. He's where's the vacancy?
You know, my father was a much more traditional Jewish guy, but interesting, and I was always very proud of my father, who's passed away just as yours has, Lisa. But you said that you were always proud of him because he never killed anyone and he never had a girlfriend.
Mm. That's because he's not Italian.
It's kind of low bar, but you know what? That's true. That's very true. When friends of his had told me that, I was very proud of that because in the circles that he moved in, most of them, not all of them, did have double lives. And forget about the killing part. That would have done me in completely. So, yes, I was proud of my father for a lot of reasons. And Alan, like you said, a very complex character. He was. It was very important to me in the book not to portray him or my mother as horrible people, as they made choices based on where they came from and what their life experiences were. And I really got that when I started to research their lives. And I really believe that rather than judge so harshly, we have to see where people come from. And writing the book explains why I am the way where I come. Learning about where I come from explains why I am the way I am today, with my strengths and certainly with my weaknesses.
That's wonderful. It's sort of a testimony to the human spirit and what we, expect. And I'm curious because, your dad is Herbie Novak. Did he come home one day as Big John and nobody questioned it? How did that happen? Or was he just going
He walked out like a nebbishy Jewish guy one day and then he came in and he was a mobster. Look at that.
Well, I think I want to add really quickly before you leave, I want to say that reading this, and I've read the book on Sam Giancana's daughter, the princess, it's very different in many ways because your father was involved in it, but also yet removed. Like you said, he didn't kill anyone. There was no... So. But did your family, because of the association, and maybe your mother talked to you about this, did you live in fear like I would have as Sam Giancana's daughter?
Never. Ever lived in fear.
Wow.
Never knew anything. I lived a normal life. I went to Ivy League schools. My friends were... I have the top people in it, at the best schools and everything. I had two separate lives. I had the life of
an
academic, and then I had this other Italian life, which I always felt safe. They were good people to me. I did not know about what they did and their backgrounds until I started my research at age 58.
Jeez.
That must have been
an eye-opener.
I never felt frightened. Never, ever.
I wouldn't either if I had them as my parents' friends. I'd like that very much.
And I think after
we were very safe on vacation.
I bet you were.
Very safe. I think after writing the book, Lisa,
it
seems like you didn't need therapy after that anymore.
No doubt.
The book really tells it all. And, we want to wish you a lot of luck with it. How's
Thank
it been going?
You.
What's it feel like to be such a well-known author all of a sudden? Because a lot of us, write blogs or do something for ourselves, but you actually did something that other people are enjoying. What's that like?
Thank you. It's new to me. I was always... I never achieved what I was able to achieve because of the anxiety and the depression that characterized a lot of my life. Academically, I was fabulous, but I couldn't translate it into anything really that I could be proud of out there. And now I'm 62 years old, and the writing and the literary critique that it's getting, the positive, is really a tremendous affirmation. I think that my... my dad would be very proud
Very proud of you. That's and Lisa, you know what's next, right? We're here in Hollywood, so a movie can't be far away.
Yeah, a screenplay. Somebody options it. That's
it's
how it works.
Being shopped now. Who? Thank you both. Thank
and you got
you.
The
and
terminology
thank you for reading
down.
Reading my book and really getting it.
I did buy it. Who? Okay, last question. Who is going to play you in the movie version?
Good question.
Angelina Jolie?
Well, it goes throughout my life, so it's got to be, you know, various stages of my life. But I got to tell you one more thing. Do you know the name of my corporation that I named for the book? I'm gonna see if you can guess it. YTTM is the acronym.
YCTM.
YT is in Thomas. Oh, YT. T is in Thomas.
I always have to Google these acronyms. I never know them.
Okay, I made. You're talking to me?
Oh, that's okay, great. That's perfect. Go. That's perfect.
Well, you know, we want to thank Lisa. We want to thank you for talking to us.
Yeah, thank you for talking to us, huh?
The book is called The Apple and the Shady Tree. Lisa Nova Goldberg, thanks for being on Gurvy's Law today.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Stay safe, everybody.
Yeah, you too.
We
you
will
too.
As long as you don't have us whacked. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
I did buy her book. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's great. I started reading it and I couldn't put it down.
Yeah.
That's because it was on my iPad and I stare at my iPad all day long.
Don't we all?
Let's talk to Conrad for a minute. We have to close the show. Oh. Conrad, you're going to close the show for
fast.
Us. You've been waiting around for a long time. Conrad, what do you have to say?
First off, I want to say I miss Julian because I used to listen to her every morning.
Thanks, Conrad.
And even back to when you were on Good Day LA.
Oh, so, gosh, that's another life, right?
You're dating yourself.
Most definitely.
Thank you, Conrad. And, you know, it's interesting because time does fly. As you get older, do you not feel that? Woo! Yeah.
Well, if I only had 20 minutes to tell you all the cool things I used to listen to when you were on and where I was at when I was listening.
Oh,
well, you only
wow.
have 20 seconds, so you're going to have to give us the abridged version.
That makes me so happy.
I was incarcerated.
Yes. My biggest fans were cops and robbers, I used to say. Yeah. Yeah. Nothing. Not in between. Yeah. Okay. Are you good now? You're out?
Oh, I've been out. I was in 1990s. Yeah, but
okay.
Now I had cancer in my face, and we talked about this when you were on the TV on the other channel. I mean, earlier in the morning.
Right.
Okay. And you're good now. The cancer is gone. Correct. You're in remission.
Since 2012.
Fantastic.
And I had 48 operations. I had 48 operations on my face.
It's such good news.
And now he looks like Brad Pitt. It's incredible. They did like plastic surgery and they got rid of the cancer.
Conrad, I wish we had 20 minutes, but we have to close the show. Thanks for calling and thanks for listening.
Thank you, Conrad. And
Jillian appreciates
for
it.
For ending on a nice note. I miss being here. This is my old studio, Conrad, so I feel like old times.
It's so great to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. You're a delight. And I love he wore his Canadian shirt, his Canadian ball cap. And I'm like, I know that lake, that lake, that lake. I love it.
Little do you know that I wear these clothes all day long.
They make me feel at home. I love it.
And Jillian Barbary,
thank you, Alan.
Thanks for co-hosting. We want to have you back.
I'm here.
And thanks
every
for listening.
Sunday.
Right here in KBC Studios. Go watch the Dodgers game. They're going to win this one.
There
I know. They're going to pull it out.
Go Dodgers.
Thanks for listening to Gurvy's Law. We'll see you next week.
This show is furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.